Lyndon Baines Johnson was many things over the course of his career. He was a member of the House of Representatives, a U.S. Senator, a Vice President, and ultimately, President of the United States. But he wasn't always a politician.
My first job after college was as a teacher in Cotulla, Texas, in a small Mexican-American school. Few of them could speak English, and I couldn't speak much Spanish.
This is from a speech Johnson gave to Congress on March 15, 1965, when he was making a case for the passage of the Voting Rights Act. In it, he described his experience teaching in the Wellhausen School on the east side of Cotulla, Texas.
My students were poor, and they often came to class without breakfast, hungry. And they knew, even in their youth, the pain of prejudice. They never seemed to know why people disliked them. But they knew it was so, because I saw it in their eyes. I often walked home late in the afternoon after the classes were finished, wishing there was more that I could do. But all I knew was to teach them the little that I knew, hoping that it might help them against the hardships that lay ahead.
Cotulla was established in 1882 as a stop on the International and Great Northern Railroad, about midway between San Antonio and Laredo. Like many towns that owed their existence to the railroad, Cotulla's street grid aligned itself with the train tracks, and its main commercial district faced them. The courthouse square was even shifted a half block so that you could see it from the train depot. This simple but effective gesture had the effect of making Cotulla feel much grander than it actually was for people arriving by train. But the architecture of a town can only do so much. Despite its thoughtful urban planning, Cotulla came to be known as a somewhat lawless place.
Well, what do you think of this town? Looks like there's a courthouse there just beyond the main street.
Why, yes, Charles. And look at all these shops. There must be three general stores. Look, there's a bank. And there's one, no, two church steeples.
Yeah, and there's a cotton gin. And, well, there do seem to be an awful lot of saloons.
Next stop, Cotulla. Everybody get your guns out.
What on earth does he mean by that, Charles?
Oh, I don't know, honey bunny.
Legend has it that 22 men, including three sheriffs, were killed in gunfights in Cotulla's early years. Still, the town grew and developed a small economy based on ranching and farming. Now, doing either of those things in the dry South Texas brush country is hard work, and Cotulla was often thought of as being poor. That's certainly how President Johnson remembered it, but that description isn't entirely accurate. Part of Cotulla's population consisted of migrant farm and ranch hands who, yes, were economically challenged, but another part of Cotulla consisted of farm and ranch owners who did okay. The town had a respectable commercial district with both Ford and Chevy car dealers. It also had its fair share of shop owners, attorneys, bankers, and doctors. In fact, there were really two Cotullas. One if you were a white landowner and another, very different one, if you were a Hispanic laborer. The things began to change in the 1970s when the town's business and political leadership began to more closely resemble the demographics of the community itself. But the pace of change was slow, at least until 2009, when something happened that changed forever the narrative and the architecture of Cotulla, Texas. That's the story we intend to tell on this, the second episode of The Works, a podcast about architecture, those who create it, and those who inhabit it. I'm Brantley Hightower. To tell the story of what happened to Cotulla in 2009, I first talked to this guy.
My name is Larry Dovalina. I'm the city manager of Cotulla, Texas.
Mr. Dovalina came to Cotulla in June of 2008. He had been the city manager of Laredo, a much larger city located an hour south on Interstate 35 on the U.S.-Mexico border. Cotulla seemed like a nice change of pace. Laredo had a population of over 237,000, whereas Cotulla had but 3,600.
It was very similar to other rural communities, kind of dying on the vine, very passive, very slow, not a lot of economic activity, having issues with budgeting and with the government itself.
The first hint he had that things were about to change came in early 2009.
We had a visit from a gentleman. I want to say he was either a pipeline contractor or somebody tied to the oil business, and he had reached out to the Chamber of Commerce saying they were bidding on a pipeline project here. And we had a session where he says, you guys are going to be inundated with workers and there's not any place to live and you're going to have all sorts of issues and you need to prepare for what's coming. And we kind of looked at him and said, yeah, we've heard this before. Little did we know it was for real.
You see, oil had been a small part of Cotulla's economy for some time. As early as the 1940s, there had been some drilling, but the yields were always relatively small. Then came fracking. Induced hydraulic fracturing, or fracking as it came to be called, is the process by which a mixture of water, sand, and chemicals is injected underground at high pressure. This causes the rock to fracture, hence the name, allowing embedded oil to be pumped up to the surface. This technique itself is not new, but combined with innovative directional drilling technologies, oil-rich shale strata became accessible to a degree never before possible. As a side note, the term frack was also used as a stand-in for the F-word in both the 1978 and 2004 versions of the TV series Battlestar Galactica.
He's lying. He is fracking lying!
I don't give a frack. It's to shoot Cylons out of the fracking sky. No fracking way, Lee. Frack.
This has absolutely nothing to do with the topic at hand. However, fracking as it relates to oil extraction has everything to do with the boom that overtook Cotulla starting in 2009. The Eagle Ford Shale is a 400-mile-long subterranean rock stratum that arcs across South Texas. Geologists have known about the existence of oil there for some time, but there was no efficient way to get it out of the ground. Fracking made that possible, and as a result, Cotulla found itself in the middle of one of the largest oil booms in Texas history. The boom has caused the town of Cotulla to change more in the past 5 years than in the previous 100. Just ask this guy.
My name is Joel Rodriguez, Jr. I'm the county judge of LaSalle County.
In Texas, a county judge acts as the chief executive of a county, much like the mayor of a town. Rodriguez grew up in Cotulla and was elected judge of the county where Cotulla is located in 2003, several years before the boom began.
So it was very quiet, small town, one motel at that time. There's probably a limited amount of gas stations, so it was very quiet. Anybody that came in from the outside, people would be asking who it was. I mean, it's a very close-knit community.
After 2009, Cotulla saw its population explode as oil companies descended upon the region to begin drilling operations throughout the Eagle Ford play. Previously, undeveloped tracts of land on the highways leading in and out of town quickly became home to a mass of new structures hastily built to support the wells and those drilling them. Cotulla used to have two hotels out by the interstate. Now it has 20, with more under construction. Cotulla used to have a single Dairy Queen. Now it has scores of chain restaurants operating at capacity. Cotulla's streets used to be mostly deserted, but now they are often clogged with semi-trucks loaded with pipe, chemicals, and other drilling materials. Billboards now display advertisements for trucking services, as well as for attorneys representing those injured in trucking accidents. City and regional leaders have tried to manage the boom as best as possible, but if Texans have learned anything from oil booms of the past, it's that a bust inevitably follows. That was something City Manager Dovalina was thinking about from the very beginning.
Everything that we do has to be with the end goal in mind of being sustainable for the future. And so even back then in 2009, when we were just starting to see the beginnings of the Eagle Ford play, we were already preparing for the bust, if the bust ever occurs. Fortunately, as you come into the city of Cotulla, you see that not only is there a play out in the acreage in the fields, but there's also a development of an industrial complex that is adjacent to the city limits of the city on both the north and the south side.
Here he's talking about an expanded railway interchange and a new processing plant that will more efficiently move South Texas oil and gas to market. These structures are the most monumental built artifacts resulting from the oil boom in Cotulla, but the real architecture of fracking is much more mundane. It is the Chili's restaurant built on what a year ago was open pasture. It is a cheaply built man camp where oil workers spend their evenings alone in their small rooms. It is a small South Texas town whose population has ballooned with the boom and in the process has become unrecognizable to the people who once called it home. When I was in town, I visited the Brush Country Museum, located just a block south of the LaSalle County Courthouse. There, I met a volunteer named Nora Tyler. Nora spent most of her 78 years in Cotulla and was a great storyteller, which had a lot to do with the fact that she had experienced well over half of Cotulla's history firsthand. For example, when we walked into the one-room schoolhouse on the grounds of the museum, she casually mentioned that this was where she herself had attended fourth grade. In other words, she would have been a perfect person to interview for this story. Unfortunately, she was hesitant to let me record our conversation, and because she was so sweet and reminded me of my own grandmother, I didn't want to push the issue. Unlike the city manager and county judge, her experience of the boom has been less about the numbers. It's been much more personal. And although she understands what has been gained from the boom, she is also keenly aware of what has been lost. The downtown looks much the same, she recalled. Other than the trucks, it's changed very little. But when you come from San Antonio, it's a very different world. It's sort of sad. She described how she's had to map different routes to get from one side of town to another because of the semis lining up to get on the highway. This is apparently a pretty big deal for locals. Nora's parting words to me were, quote, "Don't get run over by the trucks." County Judge Rodriguez shared the sense that Cotulla is a very different place now.
I think financially the community has changed, become stronger and healthier, and there's more employment opportunities for younger kids. You do have the issue that you've lost your hometown effect, meaning that there's a lot of people you don't know, and it was very advantageous when you were younger because the grapevine was powerful. You know, the kids were here, or so families kind of lose touch with other family members or other friends because the amount of people that are here.
On paper, life is good in Cotulla. Many landowners who sold their mineral rights have become millionaires. Unemployment is below 2% and wages are up. But the cost of living has gone up as well, and that's something that bothers Judge Rodriguez.
Grocery prices continue to be extremely high, very high, and I wish something could be done, but I know it's a competitive market, and it's a free market, so I mean, some of the food prices are so expensive that if you go to San Antonio, you'd probably buy it for half the price. And you have a number of very poor people that income and living conditions has worsened since the 2010 census. Because now you have elderly that are living on $400, $500, $600 of Social Security or Medicare payments month, and that's their only income, with the food going up 40%. And electricity, rents, all that is skyrocketed, and it makes them very, very hard. We helped someone look for apartments last week. The rents didn't go below $800. And if you're earning minimum wage, you know, that's your whole paycheck for the whole month.
All this has hit Judge Rodriguez very close to home. Actually, it's affected who's living in his home.
My daughter's single mom, going to college. There's no way she could afford an apartment. No way in the world. So in my case, my daughter lives with me. And I get kicked out, so I'm displaced.
For years, there were two Cotulas. The predominantly Hispanic Cotula on the east side of the railroad tracks and the predominantly Anglo Cotula to the west. Although that distinction has started to fade, by the beginning of the 21st century, two Cotulas had developed once again. There's the new Cotula, the boom town located near the interstate that consists of men, and they are mostly men, from out of town who came to Cotula to work the oil fields. The other Cotula sits about a mile to the east. It's centered around the courthouse, and it's populated by people like Nora Taylor, who have seen the world they knew transformed. It's led by people like Judge Rodriguez, who have tried to manage that transformation while attempting to hold on to parts of old Cotula. In the end, it's much easier to preserve a building than a way of life. Standing out in front of the recently restored LaSalle County Courthouse, much of Cotula looks as it always has. Some streets have been repaved and some buildings have been renovated, but things are happening there and in other towns throughout South Texas. President Johnson noticed something similar when he returned to Cotula on November 7, 1966, to visit the school where he had taught nearly four decades earlier.
The Wellhausen School looks very much the way it did when I was here. It hasn't changed a lot in 38 years. But things are happening here and in other schools throughout this land.
For Johnson, this speech was a victory lap of sorts. The previous year, he had succeeded in passing both the Voting Rights Act as well as the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, key parts of his Great Society agenda. When he spoke in the auditorium of his old school, he talked of harnessing the natural resources of Cotula. But the resources he spoke of were very different than the ones that are shaping Cotula today.
Our greatest national resource probably is not even listed in your textbooks. Our greatest resource is the skill and the vision and the wisdom of our people. And that is why we invest more in education than in any other enterprise in this country except our national defense. That is why last year your national government pledged billions of new dollars to help improve your school and schools all over America.
Fate has provided Cotula with many unexpected twists on its path from a dusty stop on a lonely railroad to the center of a major 21st century oil boom. Although it's impossible to know what the future holds, in a perfect world, the resources being pumped from underneath Cotula will help provide for the resources seated in its classrooms. Together, they could write an exciting new chapter in Cotula's ongoing history. Special thanks today to Larry Dovalina, Joel Rodriguez Jr., and Nora Tyler. Thanks also to Aaron Seward and the Architects Newspaper for letting me expand on a series of essays I wrote for the paper for this podcast. Thanks also to Rick Whelan and Jen Cosgrove for voicing the two settlers on the train to Cotula.
Next stop, Cotula. Everybody get your guns out.
What on earth does he mean by that, Charles?
Oh, I don't know, honey bunny.
Well, I'm ready. Let's do it right now, right here. Come on.
All right. Same as last time, remember? You crowd control, I handle the employees.
I love you, Pumpkin.
Love you, honey bunny. Everybody be cool! This is a robbery!
Any of you frackin' jerks move and I will execute every mother frackin' last one of you.
As always, thanks to Julie Pizzo Wood for help with the podcast logo and to Clara, the mother of two of my children, for help with its name. The music today is by Chris Zabriskie. The Works is a production of HiWorks, and you can find more information about it and everything we've talked about today at HiWorksArchitecture.com. Now that we've released two episodes, even if this particular one was released a week late, I feel like we're a legitimate podcast now, so please rate us on iTunes, and if you have time, leave a comment there as well. That helps us appear higher in search results when people are looking for a podcast about architecture.
I don't give a frack.
Until next time, I'm Brantley Hightower.